Hello, this is Alton Banks from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Well, as usual, we'll begin our Triangle Business Journal by a look at the biz page. So under the heading of Starting Out comes the article, They Help Entrepreneurs Get Launched in Chapel Hill. Classes back in session for Launch Chapel Hill, the innovative partnership that helps companies get rolling with good advice and great connections. The program started back in 2013, helped by an initial $400,000 gift from the Becker family in Chicago, and is a collaboration between the town of Chapel Hill, Orange County, and UNC Chapel Hill. Get Spiffy, the mobile car wash company, was in the first class. What we're looking for, first and foremost, is a solid team or a solid individual who can build a team, says Dina Rousset, program director at Launch Chapel Hill. We're looking at the idea as well, but often the team will have to pivot. Launch Chapel Hill gets three applications for every candidate selected, Rousset says, so the candidate's potential is critical in deciding who gets in. Launch Chapel Hill runs six-month programs for the companies it selects. Those in the program get a mentor and advice from professionals such as attorneys and accountants. They can also get help finding investors, although Launch Chapel Hill itself doesn't do the investing. And under the heading of Rising Interest comes the article, Is the Pack Up? Yeah, by 9%. NC State University is seeing a major jump in applications this year, especially from students in the state of North Carolina. Overall, NCSU has seen applications rise 9.4% to 29,395 applications, which is more growth than UNC Chapel Hill, that's 6%, or Duke University with 8.2%. Of course, as far as the growth in number of total applications, the Wolfpack and the Tar Heels were neck and neck, with Duke edging out both of the public schools. Thomas Griffin, NC State's Director of Undergraduate Admissions, says in-state applications are up 11.4%, and out-of-state is up 6.5%. Also getting a lot of interest, STEM. Those colleges have seen an 11.9% increase in applications over last year, he says. And under the heading of Cool Idea comes the article, Here's One Way to Solve Raleigh's Parking Woes. Sometimes it pays not to park. At least, that's the case for employees of Pendo, the Raleigh software firm that recently moved into 43,000 square feet of new space at Wells Fargo Capital Center. To help alleviate parking congestion, the company offers to pay its workers if they give up their parking space. The program isn't so much about the direct return to the company as it is about supporting employees and promoting alternative forms of transportation, Pendo CEO Todd Olson says. The reality is we pay for parking at our headquarters, he says. Economically, it's kind of a wash for us. The $100 monthly payment employees get to forego their space is money that can be used to buy a bike or a bus pass. It's a nice incentive, Olson says. We had a large number of folks opt to bike or walk or take the bus. A quarter of the employees take advantage of the program. And under the heading of Big Change comes the article, Broadcasters Enthused About New Technology. There was a celebratory mood in the air February 19th as Capital Broadcasting showcased new technology that will hike the quality of video for television and mobile devices. But the event at the Park Alumni Center at NC State University came against a challenging background for broadcasters as ratings drop, especially among young adults. Even Capital Broadcasting Company CEO Jim Goodman referenced the industry headwinds when he told the crowd the rise of the new ATSC technology reminded him of the shift to HD, which Capital made in 1996. He said he was mocked then for saying, "We were entering the golden era of broadcasting." "So I'm saying it again," he said of ATSC. "You can't believe our signal quality. You can't beat our coverage." Other companies are betting on ATSC as well. Nexstar Media Group, the parent company of CBS North Carolina, is heavily involved. Brett Jenkins, Chief Technology Officer of Nexstar, says ATSC allows us to upgrade the video and the quality of audio. It's more efficient. It's a bigger pipe. And under the heading of Changing Raleigh, And the last article on our biz page this week comes the article, Architect Sees Dix Park Dissolving into Downtown. Landscape architect Michael Van Valkenburg is preoccupied with transforming the Dorothea Dix property in downtown Raleigh into a park connected to the rest of the city and welcoming to all. That's what Van Valkenburg told a crowded room at the Downtown Raleigh Alliance's annual meeting at the Raleigh Convention Center on February the 18th, as he flipped through a slideshow of images showing his firm's work at Brooklyn Bridge Park, Maggie Daly Park in Chicago, and a new park being built under the Gateway Arch in St. Louis. These projects involved repurposing spaces and imagining new ways to connect them to the city core. In St. Louis, Van Valkenburg's firm designed a bridge that traverses a highway that had cut off park access. The bridge is being covered in dirt and seeded with grass, creating a wide walkway for pedestrians. In Brooklyn, Van Valkenburg helped convert old industrial waterfront property into a patchwork of green space, trails, and even beaches. The goal of connecting parks to the larger city is the same for Dix Park, he said. The elevated perch of the 308-acre property makes it for great views of downtown, but it can also give the impression that the property is cut off from the city. It makes it feel isolating, Van Valkenburg said. We want to keep that sense of it being lifted, but we want it to be more welcoming. The trick will be to dissolve the edges of the park so that it feels connected to downtown, while also making the park a magnet of activity, he said. Details of the plan will start to take shape in the coming months. Now turning to the page that's usually called On Banking, except this week it's called On Banking/Tech/Transportation. We begin with the heading of Journey Starts, and the article is RDU, Coalition Needed to Land Nonstop China Flight. Could Raleigh-Durham International Airport secure a flight to China? Not now, but within the next 3 to 7 years, predicts RDU CEO Mike Languth. On February 20th, he told a crowd of business executives gathered at the China Symposium at Duke Gardens that stakeholders from across the community will need to build a coalition to shape an incentives package for the flight. They'll also have to sell China on the Triangle region, both for tourism and business opportunities. What we cannot do is sit and wait, he said. Mike Boyd, managing partner at China Nihao Boyd Group International, said the community has to develop a long-term plan because similar efforts are underway in cities such as St. Louis and San Antonio. Every other community in America is trying to get Chinese business, and that means they're also trying to get Chinese air business, he said. David Zhou, principal at China Nihao, said North Carolina and the Triangle need to make an effort to provide accurate Chinese content on recruitment websites to expand on both business and leisure connections. And under the heading of More Options comes the little snippet, RDU adds Kansas City as new routes continue. Southwest Airlines became the third carrier in a week to announce a new nonstop route at Raleigh-Durham International Airport. The new service is to Kansas City International Airport, that's the 3-tag MCI, in Missouri, and will debut April the 8th. Until last year, that region was among RDU's top unserved domestic markets. Frontier Airlines announced plans for a nonstop flight to MCI last year, which is also scheduled to begin in April. Competition's a great thing, RDU Airport Authority CEO Mike Languth says. Our air service development team has been working hard. The Southwest News February 15th came a week after Frontier announced a slew of new nonstop flights to San Juan, Puerto Rico, Houston, San Antonio, New Orleans, Buffalo, New York, and Milwaukee. And it came days after Allegiant Air announced a new Florida service to Destin-Fort Walton Beach. Soon, RDU will have 54 nonstop flight destinations. We think it's great, Landguth says. They've been coming at a pretty good clip, and our team continues to work hard, day in and day out. And continuing with the banking tech transportation page comes the article, Takeover Thwarted. First Citizens sues Smithfield Bank. After twice failing to acquire KS Bancorp through hostile takeover attempts, Raleigh-based First Citizens Bank shares is suing the Smithfield Bank and its directors over a poison pill provision. According to a complaint First Citizens filed February 15th in Wake County, the bank, already a KS shareholder, was actively trying to increase its stake when KS implemented a rights plan to be triggered when a party acquires ownership of 15% or more of its stock. The plan would allow other shareholders to exercise a special stock purchase right, allowing them to buy additional shares at a 50% discount. According to a supporting brief filed by First Citizens attorneys, First Citizens owns about 9% of the KS common stock and was on track to acquire an additional 15% stake after not having spoken with even half the KS shareholders. As a direct result of the KS board's adoption of the rights plan and the significant dilution that would result if the rights plan were triggered, First Citizens has in fact ceased its efforts to acquire KS's common stock from other shareholders, suspended purchases in process, and informed certain KS shareholders that First Citizens would be unable to purchase their KS shares at this time, despite their desire to sell to First Citizens, the complaint states. First Citizens' suit asks that the court declare the provision unlawful so it can continue to offer KS's shareholders an opportunity to maximize the value of their investment. First Citizens had approached KS in June and July, offering takeover deals worth $33 and $35 per share, respectively. The bank's board rejected both of those bids. KS CEO Harold Keene, who is among defendants in the lawsuit, equated the moves to hostile takeover attempts and said last year that it was evidence that First Citizens' corporate culture is not in line with KS Bank's community banking values. A First Citizens spokesman declined to comment on the suit. And in another news about money comes the headline Raising Capital. And the article is Startup Funding Crosses the $1 billion Mark in 2017. Entrepreneurial fundraising broke the $1 billion mark for 2017 in the state, according to the Council for Entrepreneurial Development. The CED reported that entrepreneurial companies raised $1.1 billion, including $785 million in tech and $270 million in life sciences. And 2018 looks to be off to a good start. According to Triangle Business Journal research, these are the top tech funders of 2018 as of February 16th. And there are about seven or eight of these companies, and so the names are Precision Hawk in Raleigh, Food Logic in Durham, Eaton Solutions in Chapel Hill, First Leads in Durham, Learn Platform in Raleigh, Curate in Durham, and ScheduleSpot in Raleigh. And finally, on the banking tech transport page comes the article Triangle Startup Scores $17.6 million. With a new $17.6 million funder, startup Tethys is a step closer to changing the diaper industry forever, says co-founder and CEO Scott Bolin. The financing will enable the Raleigh-based firm to scale commercial production of its products, which, unlike the petrochemical-fueled diaper materials currently dominating an $8 billion market, are manufactured from starches. Late last year, Bolin said Tethys was up for a major contract with a brand-name diaper manufacturer, but to get enough samples to the company, it would need to make more of its material, and quickly. And cost was a barrier. Just one test could mean a six-figure bill, he said at the time. The new funder is what will help Tethys take advantage of that opportunity, fueling the build-out of the company's pilot manufacturing plant in Zeppelin, he says. It's expected to come online this spring, in time to start delivering preliminary samples to major industry players this summer. The demand has been tremendous, Bolin says, noting that the prototype plant won't be able to keep up. It will allow us to get samples in the market to customers who are interested, but we have more interest than we expected, he says of the plant. It will help us gauge interest for a full-scale plant and teach us what we need to know. With the funder, Tethys secures support from Chapel Hill-based Blue Hill Group. Now we move to the page on life sciences, and under the heading of new funding comes the article, Cary-based kidney transplant drug company scores $60 million. Cary-based Veloxis Pharmaceuticals has secured $60 million in debt financing from funds managed by Athyrium Capital Management. According to President and CEO Craig Collard, the financing positions Veloxis to achieve profitability as early as the fourth quarter. He says the company can replace and pay back a prior $30 million loan from the Lundbeck and Novo Foundations and put about $18 million into getting to profitability. The company is commercializing its immunosuppressant Invarsys XR in the U.S. Launched in 2015, the drug is for patients post-kidney transplants and helps keep their bodies from rejecting the new organ. Veloxis finished 2017 with $17.5 million in net sales in the U.S. and $4.2 million in net sales in Europe. According to Collard, the company has an operations budget of about $38 million. And under the heading of lawsuit comes the article, United Therapeutics settles patent litigation over $157 million drug. United Therapeutics has settled patent litigation over a $157 million drug. The company reached an agreement with Actavis Laboratories FL, a subsidiary of generic giant Teva Pharmaceuticals, that resolves litigation over certain patents related to one of United Therapeutics' pulmonary arterial hypertension drugs, Orenitram. United Therapeutics reported upward of $157 in revenue from Orenitram in 2016, with total revenue at roughly $1.6 billion. The settlement allows Actavis to begin manufacturing and commercializing a generic version of the drug in June of 2027, or potentially earlier under some circumstances. However, United Therapeutics noted that the agreement doesn't allow Actavis to manufacture generic versions of other products such as Tyvaso or Remodulin. Sean Snyder, Vice President and Associate General Counsel of United Therapeutics, says, "We're excited to have the litigation resolved." Teva did not comment. Tyvaso, another pulmonary hypertension product, was at the center of a lawsuit the company filed and then dropped against Vanderbilt University and one of its professors. And following on the heels of the lawsuit article comes the article opposed. Major shareholder threatens BioCryst merger plans. In late January, BioCryst Pharmaceuticals of Durham and Adera Pharmaceuticals of Exton, Pennsylvania, agreed to merge in an all-stock deal. But now a significant BioCryst shareholders are planning to vote against the combination. Great Point Partners holds a 7.6% stake in BioCryst. In a letter to BioCryst's board of directors, the company stated, "We are strongly opposed to this proposed merger. The merger is significantly unbalanced and represents a substantial transfer of highly valuable BCRX assets to the shareholders of IDRA in exchange for more speculative IDRA assets of far more uncertain value. Since IDRA's principal shareholder is also a significant shareholder of BCRX, but has invested substantially more in IDRA than in BCRX, it's our view that the merger enables such shareholder to substantially increase its interest in BCRX's assets at a substantial discount from their true value and to the ultimate detriment of the other BCRX shareholders." Great Point also believes BioCryst's lead product candidate, BCX7353, for the treatment of hereditary angioedema, has a present value of well over $1.5 billion, which is more than three times the current market capitalization of BCRX. In a filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission on February the 20th, BioCryst says its board unanimously believes that the merger of the two companies will deliver significant value and provide compelling upside opportunity by leveraging both companies' deep and diverse pipelines and steady pace of clinical milestones, as well as through achieving expected synergies. And under the heading of New Path comes Tenax plans new drug trial as it reviews strategic options. Amid an ongoing review of strategic alternatives announced in April, Tenax Therapeutics of Morrisville has its sights set on launching a new trial and the potential for deals in 2018. after the U.S. Food and Drug Administration recommended an additional Phase 3 trial for the company's product candidate, levosimendan, in cardiac surgery patients. 10x now plans to launch a Phase 2 trial for levosimendan for the treatment of pulmonary hypertension in the summer, according to interim CEO and Chief Financial Officer Michael Jebsen. The new trial is a separate initiative from the ongoing review of strategic alternatives, he says. We're still evaluating other external assets to put into our pipeline, Jebsen says. The company's ready to act on the right opportunity, and that opportunity could come in the way of a merger, partnership opportunity, or a new asset being added to the pipeline. And finally, on the life sciences page comes the article, Duke Hospital Planning $102 Million Expansion. Duke Regional Hospital in Durham has announced a $102.4 million upgrade, one that calls for an expanded medical emergency department, as well as a separate emergency, outpatient, and inpatient center for the treatment of behavioral health patients. Duke Regional President Katie Galbraith says the project was planned with the future in mind. First, Galbraith says the medical emergency department at Duke Regional is well undersized for the number of patients we're seeing. While it was built for between 25 and 35,000 patient visits a year, it's now seeing more than twice that number. At the same time, she adds, we recognize the need in the community for better coordinated care on the behavioral health side. With current inpatient behavioral health beds at Duke Regional and Duke University Hospital, neither setting is an ideal environment for our patients or staff, according to Galbraith. The project is expected to be complete in early 2021. It will see 19 psychiatric beds move from Duke University Hospital to Duke Regional, requiring certificate of need approval from the state for that part. Ultimately, the project will include 42 private inpatient rooms at the new Behavioral Health Center, as well as 18 private rooms in the separate emergency department and 30 outpatient rooms. The updated and expanded medical emergency department will grow from 36 to 49 treatment rooms and 6 to 12 private observation rooms. We saw this as an opportunity to consolidate inpatient behavioral health and at the same time allow for better coordinated care for outpatient services, as well as emergency behavioral health services, Galbraith says. While many behavioral health patients stay in the emergency department for a number of hours, there are others who stay days or even weeks, according to Galbraith. This is not uncommon to emergency departments across the U.S. Because of that, we really want to have the kind of setting that can better take care of those patients, she says. This setting is designed for the unique needs of behavioral health patients. That includes the safety of both patients and staff, and separate areas for patients who may be aggressive from those who are fragile. Now moving to the real estate page, comes the article, Adding Jobs. Pentair picks Apex for new $11.3 million lab. A global water treatment company has agreed to pump millions of dollars into a new office and laboratory building in Apex, an investment that could result in more than 50 new jobs. Pentair broke ground this month on the development of a 50,000-square-foot research and development site on Pinnacle Center Drive. The project is expected to represent an $11.3 million investment in the town. Town officials sweetened the deal by offering a tax grant that will result in Pentair recuperating 90% of the taxes it pays to Apex over the next 3 years. The town's policy allows such tax breaks for any business investments that results in a minimum of 20 jobs or $3 million in investments, as long as the decision to locate in the town was part of the competitive decision-making process in which other locations were considered, says Joanna Helms, Apex Economic Development Director. The benefit for the town will be more options to work closer to home for people who live in Apex, she says. And under the heading of By the Numbers, here's an article about the new Publix Anchor development in Raleigh. New details have been released on Phase 1 of the upcoming Publix Anchored Peace redevelopment project at the corner of Peace and West Streets in downtown Raleigh, being built by Kane Realty and Williams Realty and Building Company. Here's a rundown of the numbers. So the Publix store is going to occupy 45,600 square feet. In retail space, there's going to be 5,340 square feet. Associated with that is 417 apartments. The average unit size is going to be about 900 square feet. There'll be 735 parking garage spaces. It's scheduled to be 11 stories tall, and the expected completion date is mid-2019. And under the heading of Nice Profit comes the article, Investor Sells Cary Building After 18 Months. An office building in Cary has netted a Connecticut investor $900,000 in 18 months. In July of 2016, MDK Cornerstone LLC purchased an 18,000-square-foot building on Cornerstone Drive for $3.98 million. At the end of January, the firm flipped the property for $4.88 million. Adam Fearman of Southport, Connecticut-based Meadowlark Investments is listed as the manager of the company. The new owner is Du Quang Ung of Raleigh. The building was completed in 2008 and had no vacancy through the fourth quarter of 2017, according to Triangle Business Journal's Space publication. Tenants include an insurance agency and a dental group. Jensen McMillan, a broker with York Properties, represented the seller. Skipper Day, also with York, represented the buyer. And from Wake Forest comes the article, Custom Homes Coming, 3 miles from downtown. A residential developer has scooped up a 128-acre family property 3 miles from downtown Wake Forest and is planning to build more than 100 custom homes. Waterston Partners paid $5.5 million for two parcels on Jenkins Road, purchasing them from the Pascal family, owners of the land since the 1920s. The new community will be called Wexford Reserve and will consist of 110 home sites, Waterston partner Tom Anhut said in an email. He co-founded that firm along with Jim Adams in 2015. The wooded property sits just outside the municipal boundaries of Wake Forest and has a pond at the center. Site improvement work is slated to begin this spring. The goal is for the first homeowners to move into the neighborhood in the summer of 2019. Custom home builders have already signed on to build nearly all the sites, Anhut said. The companies include Poitras Construction Company, Braswell Custom Homes, Walker Design Build, Holden Barnett Properties, Rufty Homes American Eagle Homes, Cityscape Builders, J.P. Swain Company, and Arthur Rutenberg Homes. This is the third Waterstone project in the Highway 98 corridor. And finally, on the real estate page comes the article, Developer Grabs Downtown Raleigh Lots. The developer of the 10-story One Glenwood building in downtown Raleigh has bought two nearby underdeveloped properties. The lots are on the same block as One Glenwood, but Heritage Properties is mum on its plans. The company paid $6.75 million for the parcels, which total 0.67 acres, according to Wake County records. The properties make up the western half of the block between South Boylan and Glenwood Avenues and Hillsborough and West Morgan Streets. The lots are home to a single-story 1970s-era office building at the corner of West Morgan Street and South Boylan Avenue, and Dram & Draft, a neighborhood bar that opened in 2016 and fronts Hillsborough Street. Drew Schenck, co-founder of Dram & Draft, wouldn't comment except to say that it wouldn't mean the end of his business. It's going to be good for this neighborhood and good for us, he says. Construction is buzzing all around. Down the sidewalk, Heritage is building the $86 million One Glenwood, expected to open in early 2019. Across the street, the Thrash Group of Mississippi is building a boutique hotel. The properties were sold by a subsidiary that lists Jim Zanoni of Charlotte's FMW Real Estate as its managing member. The entity previously purchased the office building property for $1.375 million in 2005. A sales price for the Dram & Draft lot is not listed in the county deed records. Now we move to a more delicious part, shall we call it, of the Triangle Business Journal, and this page is on restaurants and retail. And under the heading of beer scene comes the article, Sorry IPA Lovers, Lager Remains the Favorite. The beer consumer has many habits and preferences when it comes to beer. Recently, Gut Check, a market research firm out of Denver, put together a few facts in the world of beer. The report states that roughly 3/4 of U.S. beer drinkers drink a beer at least once a week. But what do they prefer, bottles or cans? According to the research, drinkers between the ages of 21 to 45 prefer a bottle over a can by 62%. Can drinkers make up 28%, and 10% have no preference. As for types of beer, Gut Check says even though IPAs and its various styles are still quite popular these days, other styles remain more popular. So here's a list of about 8 types. So, and their percentage of preferences. So lagers at 21%, domestic beer non-draft at 19%, ales at 8%, IPAs at 15%, pilsners at 10%, porters at 7%, saisons at 6%, and sours at 4%. And under the heading of "And the Winner Is" comes the article, "Raleigh Chef Wins Classic Pickup Truck in Competition." Chef Dean Thompson of 4100 Lounge at the Renaissance Raleigh North Hills Hotel was recently named the winner of the second Cooking for a Classic Chefs competition. Thompson beat Southern Pines chef Matt Hannon of Ironwood Cafe in the final. Thompson's victory allowed him to go home with a restored 1949 GMC five-window pickup truck. Cooking for a Classic raises money for Carrie's Lucy Daniels Center, a nonprofit that helps children live emotionally healthy lives. This year, the competition raised $70,000 for the center. In the final, Thompson's Parsnip Ravioli, Southern Fried Flounder, and Parsnip Snickers Tort with Parsnip Ice Cream was the plate that pushed him to the winner's circle. And the next article, Dallas Company scoops up the popular beer festival. The annual World Beer Festival that comes to Raleigh and Durham every year is now under new ownership. The festival, which was run by Durham-based beer publication All About Beer magazine, has sold ownership rights to Dallas, Texas-based 87 Events. The festival, which is in its 22nd year, brings thousands of beer drinkers together to enjoy unique brews from across the world. The last event was held at the Durham Bulls Athletic Park on October the 14th. The new buyer of the festival rights is used to handling large-scale events, including marathons and marketing for USA Gymnastics. We felt this was a good opportunity for us, and we found a great buyer for the event for years to come, says Chris Rice, publisher of All About Beer magazine since 2014. The World Beer Festival also has stops in Columbia, South Carolina, and Milwaukee each year. Last fall, All About Beer magazine completed a deal to purchase Draft magazine, which has been around since 2006. Festival dates for 2018 are not yet set. And under the heading of Finding a Blend comes the article, as interest in beer rises, so does the trend of pairing beers with meals. Beer and food pairings are becoming a rising trend across the United States as meals pair beers from local breweries with a 4- or 5-course meal prepared by chefs. But why should the chefs have all the fun? Triangle Business Journal caught up with the only 2 advanced cicerones in the Triangle. That's Whit Baker of Carey's Bond Brothers Beer Company and Andy Morrison, Director of Craft Brands at Harris Wholesaler, to see how a cicerone can help restaurants plan their own food and beer pairings. A cicerone, like a sommelier for wine, is a certification of additional education in beer. So, from Morrison, the Cicerone program breaks down into 5 categories: keeping and serving beer, styles of beer, tasting and evaluating beer, ingredients and process, and food and beer pairings. So I can talk to bars or restaurants about their beer lineup and what's going to be an effective lineup. If they have a food-beer pairing program, I can help guide them. I did a training with Burgerback in Durham where I took 5 dishes of theirs and paired them with 5 different beer styles. With this, people are getting a more succinct and enjoyable pairing experience. Now from Carey Bond Brothers' Whit Baker. We're recently at Alley 26 in Durham. We picked out all the beer for them for the Durham food and beer experience. I also work with WISC, the community cooking school in Cary. The chef prepares the food for the people, and I will stand up and tell people about how the beer pairings work. You can talk to people about the flavors you're getting from the beer and food and tell them how they complement or do not complement each other. also teach about food and beer pairings at Awake Tech. I used to be a teacher, so I like standing in front of people and talking. And now in the yummy, cool spots department comes Triangle Hotels lauded in ranking of state's best. U.S. News and World Report recently released its list of best hotels in North Carolina for 2018. The Triangle was well represented. The list is ranked by an unbiased analysis of awards, expert recommendations, and user ratings. The list includes some of the state's top properties in the mountains and at the coast. So here's a look at the top 10 on the list. And in addition to that, I'll read the location of each of the places. The Umstead Hotel and Spa in Cary, Old Edwards Inn and Spa in Highlands, the Fearington House in Pittsboro, the Ritz-Carlton in Charlotte, the Grand Bohemian Hotel in Asheville, as well as the Inn on Biltmore Estate in Asheville. Number 7 is the Omni Grove Park Inn in Asheville. The Ballantine at Charlotte is number 8. The O'Henry Hotel in Greensboro is 9. And bringing up the list, number 10, Sanderling Resort in Duck. And under the heading of a new option comes the article Food Delivery Service Making Move into Triangle. DoorDash, the food delivery service that connects customers with their local restaurants, launched in the Triangle on February 21st. At the start, DoorDash will be giving customers $5 off an order of $15 or more with the promo code TRIANGLEDASH, valid through March. DoorDash will be delivering food from over 1,000 restaurants in the area. Some of the local participants include Duck Donuts, The Cheesecake Factory, P.F. Chang's, Buffalo Wild Wings, Red Robin, Brio, Smashed Waffles, Flying Biscuit Cafe, Mia Francesca, and the Driftwood Southern Kitchen. Now we reach the cover story for today's for this week's Triangle Business Journal. And that cover story is Massive Lennar Seeks to Throw Weight Around. When Lennar Carolinas bought a sprawling family farm west of Apex last April, real estate analysts called the acquisition historic. The buy, $25.7 million for 225 acres, was one of the largest single-day land takedowns ever seen in the Triangle. Trish Hanchett, Lennar's Raleigh division president at the time, likened the deal to adding an aircraft carrier to the company's fleet of properties in the Triangle. The publicly traded company, ranked as the second biggest home builder in the country, had mostly been buying and developing battleship-sized parcels since the recession. Hanchett said, but in the wake of the Smith Farms move, Lennar would be on the lookout for bigger deals. But now, Lennar itself is bigger, much bigger. On February the 12th, the company's shareholders approved the $9.3 billion acquisition of Cal Atlantic, a behemoth itself, ranked fourth in the nation among home builders. The deal makes the new merged company the largest home builder in the country, based on revenue, and catapults the firm, into the top market share slot in the 16 U.S. metro areas, including the Triangle. In the Raleigh-Durham area, Lennar and Cal Atlantic combined for 1,180 closed homes last year, according to data from Metro Study. No other company surpassed 1,000. But even with its new muscle, Lennar faces a challenging task in the Triangle, where finding developable land in prime locations is difficult and competition is fierce. Lennar executives insist the merger will give the company the financial heft needed to pursue large projects such as Smith Farms, while cutting overhead costs, positioning it to dominate markets. Lennar executives have been tight-lipped about the acquisition, declining to comment by email or return phone calls. But people within the industry are paying close attention to see just how far the effects might ripple throughout the region's red-hot residential real estate market, where demand is high, but inventory is low. At stake are the prices of labor and material throughout the residential construction industry, bottom lines for home builders, and potentially home prices for consumers. While the merger has some concern about further escalation in land costs, other analysts and industry professionals are skeptical that combining forces will be enough for Lennar and Cal Atlantic to exert their will in the Triangle market. I think they're going to do fine here, Royal Oaks Building Group founder Rich Van Tassel says. But locally, there are just so many national builders that are out there banging around. The troubles facing home builders in the Triangle are not necessarily new or unique. Across the country, home building companies are coping with ongoing labor shortages and increasing construction costs. The result has been a continued slowdown in new homes construction compared to historical norms. From the 1960s to the turn of the millennia, quarterly new home starts in the U.S. hovered around 1.5 million nationwide, according to Redfin, a residential real estate website. The post-recession trend has been upward, but production still lags. In the last quarter of 2017, new home starts ticked in at just over 1.25 million, a number that takes into account seasonal variations in home building. Along with the labor and construction cost issues, the slowdown is compounded by access to land. Especially as building in urban areas has become more desirable, it's harder to find the land at a good price and good financing, says Taylor Marr, Redfin's senior economist. Developers in the Triangle have cited similar concerns, saying the scarcity and higher cost of land has affected everything from rents at new apartment complexes to home prices. In theory, consolidation should help boost new home construction by addressing some of the underlying obstacles home builders are facing, economists say. It might be a little bit easier to share labor or get better deals on prices if you're bigger, Marr says. That can mean lowered costs for materials or labor, or even better financing deals. But whether the new beefed-up version of Lennar can achieve any of these goals in the Triangle is made more difficult by the number of players in the market. There are 7 publicly traded firms among the top 10 companies building subdivisions in the region. Like many of the tech companies and startups that make their home in the Triangle, the home builders come because of strong job and population growth, buoyed by the long-term security of the universities, the healthcare system, and the state capital, says Moss Withers, a broker with Raleigh's NAI Carolinic Realty Office, who specializes in large land sales. That's what grooms a solid base, Withers says. They don't want to take risks. You go to places outside this market, there are more obstacles for success. The market fluctuates a lot more. It's less of a leap for a home builder to come in and be successful here. More players mean a home building landscape that's more diffuse, and this holds true in the Triangle. The top 25 builders here accounted for 6,961 new home sales in 2017, which was 68% of the entire market, according to data from Metro Study. The home building landscape is more top-heavy in Charlotte, where the top 25 homes have 83% market share. In Austin, Texas, that proportion is 84%. The crowded and relatively diluted pool of competitors means there are more companies in the hunt for land and top talent. On the whole, some in the industry believe the crowded landscape makes it more difficult for a single company to dominate. Consolidation could prove helpful in the new company's ability to follow through on large land deals. Lennar will have deeper pockets than the competition, and that can translate into more aggressive pursuit after prime parcels. It gives them power to get control of more deals, Withers says. But achieving the kind of growth goals that the new company will likely set for itself could prove difficult. Several sources in the home building industry say the company wants to build around 1,700 homes this year, a number that would be astronomical for the Triangle. Even surpassing the 1,000 home threshold is no easy task. Van Tassel has been running Royal Oaks since 2000, and he only remembers a handful of instances in which a company broke 1,000 homes in a year. It's a difficult thing, he says. Everybody wants to do it, but there's just so many of us. The anti-growth sentiment cropping up in corners of the Triangle, where home builders are most active only, makes this more difficult. Lennar and Cal Atlantic have a cluster of developments in western Wake County, from Cary to Holly Springs. Pulte Group, another national builder that was the leading firm in the Triangle before the merger, also has a large presence in that area. In Holly Springs, for example, community concerns about large projects have led town officials to urge developers to consider traffic as a top priority when pitching new development. In nearby Apex, a Change.org petition demands the town to save its trees from new development gained more than 2,100 signatures in January. Lennar executives have touted the merger as a deal that will save on costs and propel it into the future. In an earnings call after the merger, executives predicted savings of at least $75 million in the 2018 fiscal year and $250 million in the following year. A majority of the savings would come from lower construction costs, they said. 50% of existing Cal Atlantic development will be rebranded to Lennar. The merged company plans to convert many of the communities to Lennar's Everything Included package, which is a more uniform home style that company officials say will reduce construction costs and time. Lennar and Cal Atlantic were not the first to attempt to gain efficiencies in the home building pipeline by combining forces, and they won't be the last. Cal Atlantic itself is the result of a merger of two home builders, Standard Pacific Homes and Ryland Homes, that took place in 2015. Pulte Group went through a similar acquisition in 2009 when it acquired Syntex Corporation. Most recently, Canada-based Mattamy Homes purchased Van Tassel's Royal Oaks Building Group in November. Even private equity firms with foreign money are jumping in the game. Last year, Dan Ryan Builders, ranked third in the triangle, sold a major equity stake to a Japanese home building firm. While the newly merged companies talk about cost savings, having larger companies in the land rush could create more price pressure on the parcels that are available. With this and any other merger or consolidation, it's going to create strong demand for a limited supply of lots, says Brant Chesson, president of Homes by Dickerson. The effect could be prices that rise even higher, and that's an issue that's become a problem in the Triangle, Chesson says. I think our market has to really think about affordability for buyers, he adds. For labor and materials and the land costs, we've been able to raise the price and pass it on to the buyer. And I think we're getting to a point where we can't. Associated with the cover story article, there are a couple of charts and graphs. Let me read you very quickly the top 10 Triangle home builders. These are for annual closings 2017. So at the top is Pulte, Syntex, Del Webb, John Whelan with 725. Lennar, of course, is second with 668. Dan Ryan Builders, third with 550. And, of course, Cal Atlantic with 512. And, of course, the article talks about the combined sellings of Lennar and Cal Atlantic. MI Homes at 427. D.R. Horton, Express, Emerald, Freedom, and Regent combined. Those are 350. Royal Oaks at 324. AV, Savvy, Imagine Homes at 300. 9 is Ashton Woods at 274. And number 10, Beezer Homes at 273. Also associated with this cover story is a graph that shows the percentage of top 25 builder market share for a half dozen areas. And I'll give you the percentages for the top 25 builder market share. Obviously, if you subtract that percentage from 100, you'll have the rest. But the part here is to note that unlike some markets like Charlotte or Austin, Texas, the top builders are not as dominant in the triangle. And so we start with the lowest top 25 builder market share and go to the highest percent. So the Nashville, Davidson, Murfreesboro, Franklin, Tennessee area has 60.2%. The Atlanta, Sandy Springs, Roswell, Georgia, 64.4%. The Raleigh-Durham area is 67.6%. Charlotte, Concord, Gastonia, North Carolina, and South Carolina, 83.3%. And the Austin, Round Rock, Texas area, 83.7%. And finally, topping the list is the Orlando, Kissimmee, Sanford, Florida area with 88%. Being built by the 25 builders. Finally, the last graphic in the cover story is a bar graph that shows a comparison between the number of homes built by Lennar versus Cal Atlantic. And the heading says Lennar builds more homes at a cheaper price point than Cal Atlantic in the triangle. Now, these are for 2017 closings. So in the 150,000 to 199,000, Lennar's at 31, Cal Atlantic's at 3. These are grouped obviously in $50,000 increments. So from 200 to 249, Lennar at 98, Cal Atlantic 45. 250 to 299, Lennar 92, Cal Atlantic 46. And the 300 to 349, Lennar 125, Cal Atlantic 150. And in the 350 to 399K, Cal Atlantic 133, Lennar 86. In the 400 to 499,000 regions, 109 for Lennar versus 106 for Cal Atlantic. And finally, in the half million and up, Lennar 80 homes and Cal Atlantic 75. Now we come to the viewpoint page of this week's Triangle Business Journal, and the editor's notebook this week is entitled, Need Direct Flights to Attract Foreign Visitors. Reading the story on how the Raleigh-Durham International Airport is in the beginning stages of a push for a direct flight to China made me curious as to who visits us from abroad and how much they spend. There are no direct flights to China from North Carolina yet, so I wanted to see the international visitors and spending numbers for the Tar Heel State. In 2016, Canadians came in droves to North Carolina and spent the most money as well. North Carolina welcomed some 369,000 visitors from Canada who collectively spent about $234 million. That's an average of about $634 per visitor. Visitors from the United Kingdom held the second spot, that's 75,000 folks, but their per-visitor spending jumped to some $1,773. Folks from Germany, that's 47,000 visitors, spent slightly less at about $1,500 a visitor. Next was China. More than 33,000 Chinese visitors came to North Carolina in 2016 and collectively spent some $101 million that year. That was more than $3,000 per visitor, easily the largest spend among the visitors from top foreign countries. While the economic demographic aligns with RDU's wishes, the total number of Chinese visitors falls woefully short of the triangle deserving a daily nonstop flight. The numbers are simply not there right now. Anecdotal evidence suggests the visitor activities driven by Duke University and other education-related travel, business involving Lenovo, and quite a few Chinese businessmen looking for real estate from the coast to the mountains, mainly the coast. There's another ominous sign for the travel industry, however. Earlier this month, the Commerce Department released numbers that revealed a 3.1% decrease in international visitor spending over the course of 2017 after declining in 2016 as well. Travel economists say spending by international visitors in the United States, which is counted as an export dollar, declined by 5.8% from 2015 to 2017, while other U.S. exports increased by 3.5%. This is stark contrast to the 2010-2015 period, when spending by international visitors in the U.S. increased by 48%, more than twice as fast as the 21% increase in other exports of U.S. goods and services. Without a doubt, the dollar strength affects international spending, and currently the U.S. is on the wrong side of that equation. But as we embark on our pitch to land that direct China flight in a few years, we need to increase that base number of visitors, regardless of the growing number of folks in the triangle making their China visit each year. Numbers don't lie. The visitors column for this week is written by John Hood, who's chairman of the John Locke Foundation. His column is entitled, States Can Lead on Funding of Roads. When the Trump administration finally filled in the outlines of its infrastructure plan a few days ago, many seemed to be disappointed to learn that only $200 billion of the proposed $1.5 trillion in expenditures over the next decade would come from federal coffers. I wasn't disappointed. I was relieved. Much of the federal government's current investment in infrastructure is of dubious constitutionality and of questionable value. A vast expansion, especially given our growing federal deficit projections, would move it beyond the dubious and questionable into the realm of the indefensible. Transportation and other infrastructure have been and should continue to remain primarily the responsibility of states, localities, or the private sector. Contrary to popular belief, for instance, our surface transportation system is overwhelmingly privately owned and financed because its value mostly consists of privately operated cars and trucks, not of the roads they traverse. Regarding government's role, it's silly to suggest that if Washington doesn't do something, it won't get done. Every resident of the United States also resides in a smaller jurisdiction capable of raising and spending revenue. Over the past decade, our own state has become a national leader in tackling its infrastructure needs. Over three gubernatorial administrations and state legislatures run by both major parties, North Carolina policymakers have set firmer priorities within the state's transportation budget, initiated new user-funded projects, and redirected gas taxes and other car-related revenues to their proper use of constructing or maintaining roads. As a result, the state is spending hundreds of millions of dollars more each year on transportation without resorting to major tax hikes. the benefits are becoming more apparent every year. Long-delayed projects such as bypasses, outer loops, and additional interstate lanes are finally underway or nearing completion. Potential employers and residents are gaining confidence that future growth won't turn North Carolina into a congested mess. David Hartchin, Emeritus Professor at UNC Charlotte, has for 23 years produced annual rankings of America's highway systems. Currently published by the Reason Foundation, a California-based think tank, Hartchin's latest report ranks North Carolina 14th in highway performance, up from 20th as recently as 2012. Indeed, only three states posted a bigger improvement in highway performance than North Carolina. That trend will likely continue in the coming years. As states like North Carolina address their own needs, what role, if any, should the federal government play? If we take the Constitution seriously, the answer should be not much. Washington does have an interest in ensuring a transportation network sufficient for national defense and in resolving cross-border disputes among governments or private operators. Under President Donald Trump's proposal, every new federal dollar for infrastructure would be offset by a dollar spending cuts elsewhere. Each of those dollars, in turn, would serve as leverage for projects primarily funded by states, localities, or the private sector, in the latter case in particular, to be repaid by user charges such as port roads, port fees, or road tolls, rather than by general taxes imposed on those not using the asset in question. The plan also proposes to clear away the regulatory underbrush past presidents and Congresses have built up over the past century. Thanks to contracting mandates and permitting rules, it costs much more than it should to build new waterworks, highways, or rail lines. Just as excessive taxes and regulations discourage private investment, excessive mandates and reviews discourage public investment in assets such as transportation. I'm more supportive of the deregulation elements of the plan than I am of federal leveraging funds. Offsetting cuts in federal spending would be most welcome, naturally, but seem unlikely in our current investment of busted budget gaps and soaring deficits. I'd rather let states chart their own courses on infrastructure, likely reflecting the differing priorities, of reddish states, bluish states, and private entrepreneurs, and then let people choose where and how to live and travel. In short, let North Carolinians and our counterparts elsewhere figure this out for ourselves. Well, that music can only mean that we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Alton Banks, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long till next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Once again, that's 919-832-5138.